No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-628-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. Tonight, it's just me and Maria. We're going to talk the talk, and hopefully we walk the walk too. But it's been a while since Marie and I have been on without a guest, so we wanted to do some recapping of what's been going on and talk about what I think is a very important issue, and I think Maria agrees, the loss of civility in our society. Hi, Maria.
Well, Michael, I think good afternoon and evening to our listeners and to you, that you and I have commented that while we differ in opinions, we agree on more. But when we do disagree, it's with respect and civility, as you so like wisely said. And then we also come to a point where we agree to disagree. No one's bad. No one's wrong. It's just that we have a different point of view and opinion. And how boring would our world be if we all thought the same? So it's not that we disagree, it's how we disagree. And that was one of the things that I thought was important for us to speak with our listeners about today, because America is disagreeing, which is not bad and it's not wrong, but they're doing it violently and they're doing it lawlessly and they're doing it painfully and hurtfully. And we have to change that. That can't be. We cannot let that happen much longer because it's tearing us all apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? We certainly have seen that over and over again recently. Everything from what's happened in Charleston to you know, the reports that have come out this week that you mentioned. I know you want to talk about, Maria, about school children. And, you know, the bottom line for me, I think, politically, is that we put these labels on people and then we automatically shut down. Liberal, conservative, you know, Second Amendment people, right to lifers, abortion people, tree huggers, whatever the label is, we put the label on people and then that's it. We end the conversation right there. I don't want to talk to you because you're such and such. And I think that's one problem that I see over and over again that I think has to change.
So the reason that we mention school children is because I believe that what we're seeing is poor upbringing. And if we can help to make a change with the next generation, that might start the healing as the pendulum can then swing back to being more kind and more courteous. And one of the things that I think is the problem, and I know we don't say problem, we say challenge, but I see it as a problem, is that the parents are abdicating their parenting to either nannies or sitters or social media, because that entertains and occupies, and it takes the onus off of the parent. And I'm not suggesting that all parents do this, but I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a meal and the parents have the kids with headphones on and their tablets in front of them, and not a word is said to the kids, And that allows then the parents, I guess, to have alone time. And even my kids have elbowed me and said, would you look at that? And so that was when I was hearkening back to the day when I was raising my family. We had dinner together every night. And I was Googling today because there used to be a campaign about promoting dinner once a month for families. But the statistics are amazing with what happens, the side benefits with having dinner together. And they say such that lower rates of substance abuse, lower rates of teen pregnancy, lower rates of depression, as well as higher grade point averages and higher self-esteem. That's because they're having dinner together. So it's not just something that you do, it's something that ripples through. And this is a 15-year study that is followed families that have dinner together, and they say 5 nights a week in this study. So that's what made me start to think, is that we've raised ill-behaved people because they weren't given the right example. And that's when I started reminiscing about my grandfather stood up every time a woman walked into the room. When do you see that? And I forget male or female, I open the door for whomever is behind me. I don't care if it's a man or a woman or a young kid or an older person. I just think it's common courtesy. It's just decency. It's respect. And I'm not seeing that anymore.
Well, you know, I think that these small courtesies that you talk about, like standing up when a woman comes in a room or holding a chair or opening a door or you know, the thing about it is that it requires you to acknowledge the other person. It requires you, you know, when you stand and hold the door open for somebody, it's not just about you. It's about a recognition that there's another person there that deserves your, you know, whatever you want to call it, respect or assistance or, you know, but that you're not alone in the world, that the whole damn world doesn't revolve around you. And that's a hard thing to teach children because they have a natural tendency to go there, right? I mean, the natural tendency for children is me, 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 me. It happens when they're 2. I've got one that's just about to grow out of it. She's 25. So, you know, it takes a while, right? It's me, me,
yes,
me,
and,
me,
and
me.
That is natural and normal for them to be selfish.
Right. And so you have to mitigate that somehow, and you have to work. I think you really have to actively work. I think you've hit on it, that you have to actively work to mitigate against that and say, hey, look, it's not all about you. It's about the other person. And it's funny that we all come together, and you know, when you go to an elementary school or you go to a preschool class, they all hold hands and they sing about each other. But then when they walk out the door, they need to have that reinforced, that, you know, we're all in this together, and that, you know, we need to help each other. And you know what? I think that all in all, there's still a great spirit of that in America. You know, we've seen in the midst of all this tragedy that we've seen lately in places like Charleston or Las Vegas or Puerto Rico or, you know, the hurricanes in Texas and Louisiana, we've seen great acts of heroism too and selflessness. You know, there's a woman in our area who was shot through the eye in Las Vegas and almost lost her life. She did lose her right eye, a young woman. But she tells a story about how a guy pulled over in a pickup truck. They saved her life. Minutes would have made a difference in this woman's life. She was shot through the eye with this high-powered rifle. Her boyfriend and this man who she didn't know, who came into the midst of danger, was nobody. He wasn't a first responder. He wasn't, you know, he was just a guy on the street. They threw her in a pickup truck and rushed to the emergency room. So we've seen great acts of selflessness and the things that really we're talking about today to bring people together. But unfortunately, we're also seeing too much bullying, too much self-centered attitude, and a loss of civility. just common civilities. You and I had that guest. We had that woman on the show who talked about just simple, everyday manner.
She was talking to us about etiquette.
Right, about etiquette.
You know, how that's even gone, and, you know, how you introduce someone to another depending on rank or seniority or what have you, and what utensils you use and how you set the table and all of that. I mean, that's where I think it really does start at home. And interesting that you talk about civility, but Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch said yesterday that suppressing disagreement in the name of civility is wrong. Well, which I thought was a great thing for this man to say.
Well, I mean, I think he's talking about civility in a different light. I think he's talking, you know, that would be my guess, is that he's using the word in terms of you know, a national law and order, more of a law and order sense, that we should, you know, that we should we should not step on protests. We should not, you know, halt protest or mitigate against protests in the name of law and order. It would be my guess. When I'm the civility I'm talking about is just the common courtesy, and maybe courtesy is a better word. A common courtesy with people. Now I'm in the. I've spent my whole life in the sales business. Okay, I'm in politics today, and that really isn't much different than all the other sales I've done in my life. I'm in the business of trying to get people to like me. I need you to vote for me, and you're not going to vote for me. It's funny that there's a personality, a strong personality element to this. You can take somebody and put them up there, and if they're the most competent person on the planet with the best resume in the world, but people don't like them, they don't get elected. You have to be liked. So I'm in the business of making people like me. And as a you know, just a matter of fact, as that goes, I tend to try to be very polite to people and very respectful, and, you know, because I you know, that's what I do. And
yeah,
that's
but
what I do.
I would suggest, and I don't know you well, Michael, but I would suggest that that's also who you are.
Well,
you speak,
you
very
know,
fondly and highly of your wife and your family and your sister and your brother and your father-in-law, with whom you disagree on matters, but you strike me as someone who is a decent, kind human being. Forget that you want people to like you and vote for you.
Well, that's thank you for saying that. And that may be true. And please don't confuse fear with, you know, fear of my wife with with you know, she's bigger and stronger and smarter. But no, that's true. But and I was raised that way. I certainly was. But I also have this thing. I have this thing that I think, I don't know what you want to call it as a politician. You know, I call it the me teacher, you know, where I want people to recognize me. And you know, I've recognized this over my life, that I can walk into a room, and if there's 300 people in the room and 299 of them like me and one of them doesn't, I get obsessed with dealing with the one that doesn't like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go over and say,
nature,
say
though.
why don't you like
what
me?
What is it that you, yeah.
See,
what,
I'm wonderful, what? You know. But
well,
but
they
anyway,
say actors do that too about reviews, that there might be one bad one and that's the one they focus on.
Well, and you know what? I used to say I would try every way I could to get my kids to embrace this idea, even going as far as telling them that it was the cheapest thing they could do to get along in society. I would say it really doesn't take much. I used to say this all the time. It really doesn't take much to say yes, sir, no, ma'am, hold the door, be polite. And it impresses people when you do that, especially today, because we lack it. You know, I mean, it drives me crazy. I go on the metro sometimes. I hate the metro, but I go on it every once in a while, and I'll see women standing while young men are sitting, And I'll see pregnant women. I've even seen pregnant women standing while young men are sitting. I mean, it just, I want to just slap them in the back of the head and say, hey,
who raised you?
Yeah.
What is that?
And I'll tell you the story. This is true. We came back from Hawaii, and my son, who couldn't have been more than 10 or 12 at the time, we were on a thing called a people mover. And this is at Dulles Airport. I don't know if you've ever been to Dulles Airport, but it's a very small airport. It was made to be very convenient. So the way they get people with a very big airfield, the way they get people out to the airfield is they put them on a thing called a people mover, which is like a big, big bus. It almost looks like a lounge, and it pulls up and people get in. Well, there weren't enough seats for everybody, and it had been a long trip. People were tired. We had come all the way from Hawaii back to Washington. But there was a pregnant woman standing up, and I was standing up, and Nick and my little kids were sitting down, and I said to Nick, go offer your seat to that lady. And when Nick got up and did it, then there were a couple of full-grown men, I think, who were embarrassed and also did it. But she came and she took Nick's seat. And it just blew me away that a 12-year-old boy had to do that when there were dozens of full-grown men sitting there watching this woman, because these things are very jerky. You know, they're like a bus. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, but it was like it hadn't dawned on any of them.
That's what I'm talking about. And the fact that you could hopefully, by teaching your son a great lesson in public, and then not that your intention was to shame those men, that they actually did feel something, and maybe they'll think about it again the next time. But it was tougher for me as a single mom to say that stuff to my sons, because I know that they would say, well, what do you know, you're a woman, because, you know, that it wasn't coming from a man. But to this day, my sons stand at the kitchen table and wait for me to come and sit down before they'll take a seat. And they do that with their girlfriends. And now I have a daughter-in-law, and he does that with her mother. And she told me early on, she was like, I haven't ever experienced that. And I kept saying, sit down, sit down. He's like, no, I'm waiting for, you know. So it makes me proud that now, even though they're millennials, they're still keeping some of the lessons alive that they learned.
Right. That's the greatest thing in parenting. You say to your son 150 times, let the ladies off the elevator first. Let the ladies off the elevator first. And then one time you forget to say it and he actually does it. And you go, wow. You know, all the times I thought he was ignoring me, you know, it actually sunk in. So,
and like, what's the magic word when they would ask for something? And of course, it's thank you, right? And so my ex at the time said to me, how many times do we have to say it? And I said, until we don't.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no, you know, counter going on that when we get to 250, that means, you know, it's just someday it'll become automatic. But that's what I'm thinking about. If we could remember that everybody is a human being and they have their insecurities and their fears and their depressions and their hard knocks and their successes and their failures, I think that would make us less violent, because it's another kindred spirit instead of the enemy.
Well, you know, I think that we tend to be self-centered. And I hate to say this, but our society, you know, encourages that. And again, I think we have to be proactive, because, look, a capitalist democracy is the best form of government, in my opinion. And I think most Americans would agree with that. But it is a self-centered form of government. It's not, you know, socialism, you're forced to get along with other people. But in our democracy, we value freedom. We value, you know, our right, our personal rights.
Well, capitalist is kind of dog eat dog, that I need to get there sooner and quicker and faster to make my success at your expense.
Right. And unfortunately, that's, you know, democracy, I think, dovetails nicely with that, because we say you're entitled. You're entitled. You have a right. You know, this is your right. So I think we have to do things as a society to mitigate against the downside of that, right? There's always an upside and a downside to everything. And maybe the downside to democratic capitalism is that it makes us all so damn self-centered.
Well, it's called individualistic. Our society is individualistic instead of collective. So, yes, you're right. We all value that.
I'm not saying that you should give up your freedom or you should give up your rights or you should give up, you know, but you should. I think that if we did things to require us to come together more, for example, look, I don't have any problem with you having a gun if you want it, Maria. You know, I grew up around guns. I'm not afraid of guns. But we need to stop this nonsense that's going on in places like Las Vegas. And the stuff that the NRA puts out there and stands up and says, if you take the guns away from bad people, only bad people have guns. Well, you know what? It's not bad people that are killing people. It's good people that are killing people. None of these people have criminal records. Adam Lanza didn't have a criminal record. The guy in Las Vegas didn't have a criminal record. You know, we have to find a way to balance that and say, okay, you have a right to have a gun. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the Second Amendment, but it can't be absolute. You can't scream fire in a crowded theater as much as we value free speech. So we need to, and the way to do that, I think, is to recognize that there are other people in the world and there are other needs. There's a need to keep, as well as keeping you safe and keeping you free, we need to keep other people safe too. You need to be able to go to the movies and feel safe, or go to a concert and feel safe, or exercise your First Amendment rights and feel safe. And I think that, we have to do things to make people sit up and realize that, and not just say, hey, look, I have a right to have as many guns as I want, you know? I don't believe.
Well, that's why I say that I think it's a lack of connection to the human condition. And if you can instill it with something as simple as having dinner as a family, it's not like we have to teach our kids how to be empathetic, because usually the human condition is such that we have empathy. But if you start simple, then hopefully we will create a society. And I know what you're saying, there are acts of heroism, but I think I'm not talking about that, because we saw that at 9-1-1. That's why the plane went into the Pentagon instead of where it was intended.
Right.
But
right.
I'm just talking about everyday common courtesy, you know, not road rage, not cutting people off. It's not that difficult. I smile at people and they look at me like, what the hell? I don't know you. And I'm like, right. Holy hell, it's just a smile. It's free. Right. And yes, you're right, I don't know you, but you're another human being on the planet and we're crossing paths. It's the funniest thing. I'm not waving at them like, hello, how are you? I'm just smiling.
I feel
embarrassed sometimes because they look at me so disdainfully, and then I think, you know what, that's your problem. I'm not going to change my behavior because you think I'm foolish for smiling at someone I don't know.
Right. Well, I just went, you know, I'm a diabetic, so one of the things that I'm trying to do in the last year or so is I try to walk a lot, because exercise helps me. So I go out in Chicago to visit my daughters, you know, and they live in what I would guess is an emerging neighborhood. So I go out in the neighborhood. I say good morning to everybody. I mean, there are people out there that look like they're going to attack me. they look like they're afraid. You know, like I'm going to, if they
you
say
want
good
something.
Morning, yeah, if I say good morning back to me, I'm going to grab them and take them over to a fundamentalist church and try to convert them or something, you know, or ask them for money or something. And then of course there are other people that say good morning. And I don't care. And it even embarrasses my children sometimes. I'm like, you know what, if I say good morning and they don't say good morning, fine, you know, let them be that way. But I don't have to be a jackass just because they're being a jackass. You know, I can just be, and that's the way I feel about it. I think it's really, really simple just to acknowledge other people.
And that's a perfect example. And you're not running for office in Chicago, so you're not doing it for people to like you to vote for you. It's just the human condition, the human experience. And that's what I think we're losing with this, the social media. You know, there was a study this week that said the preschoolers, they used to be on their devices up to 15 minutes a day. Now it's 47 minutes a day, and that's under five. And so it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better unless there's some kinds of intervention, which I'm hoping I'm going to learn about that as I enter into my next round of studies. I don't know if I told you, I applied for my PhD in media psychology.
Oh, my God, Maria.
Right. You were gone that week.
I have to say that once again, I'm proud that of you for doing that, because I think, you know, that I used to have a friend that said, those of us who dare to teach must never cease to learn. So I think that's really, really noble on your part to continue to expand your mind and your studies and find out what's going on in the world and be engaged. I think we need more people like you in the world.
Thank you for that. Congratulations. I haven't been accepted yet. I should be hearing in the next week or two. But the field is a burgeoning one. This is the only one of its kind in the country. And it is taking how communication does or doesn't or isn't effective and how to manipulate that. Now, people who have ill intentions might want to brainwash, but I certainly won't be one of those, because I want to work with universities and nonprofits and et cetera. But it's how to craft your message so that it's getting heard, and or how to attract the demographic that you're targeting, or that, you know, sort of things. So I certainly won't be working for Monsanto, let's put it that way.
Well, you know, I mean, and that again in politics has become one of the main things, and over the year, I mean, it's always been important in politics. I was a direct mail consultant for many years, so we spent a lot of time studying just that very issue.
You're right, but, and campaigns is another one of the principal and public policy of where this education is headed.
Well, you know what? I must say, we have a very contentious gubernatorial election, which ends on Tuesday as Election Day. I don't know why that is.
In October?
It's probably next. It's probably the first Tuesday in November, because the Election Day is generally the first Tuesday after. In fact, always the first Tuesday. I should know this, right? The first Tuesday of first Monday in November. But it's in a couple of weeks, and there's been nothing but negative ads. I haven't seen, I've only seen one or two positive ads on either side, you know, and there's ads saying that one candidate encourages MS-13 activity by being a supporter of sanctuary cities, and the other one is saying this guy has been never done anything for anybody but himself except make himself rich by being a lobbyist. Nobody's talking about the issues. They're talking about, you know, I'm less of a jerk than the other guy. And that, you know, as somebody in politics, I just really, really hate that. I want people to talk about what they're going to do, not why you shouldn't vote for the other guy, why you should vote for me.
And Michael, that's one of the reasons that I could never be a candidate. I can't do that. I don't know how you do, because they say you got to swing where they're swinging. You can't take the high road, because if you don't deny the negativity, then that must mean that you are guilty of it, or else you would have distanced yourself from it or what have you. And I have run campaigns, and I think I'll be even more effective after my degree, but I can't, I would have loved to have been in elected office, but I couldn't play the game.
Well, you know what? I think that you have to have a tough skin. And I was attacked and viciously attacked because there was a guy named Michael Brown who actually went to prison. not long ago for taking bribes from the FBI. But he was running when I was running, and I think most people considered his – he ran for mayor. He got 1,000 votes for mayor, 1,000 votes. I got 207,000 votes in the last election. But they – but there was all – I was accused by my opponent of trying to pretend that I was him and you know, and I would say, but I was elected long before he ever ran. He's the son of Ron Brown, who's a famous – he was the Secretary of Commerce, very famous in Washington. And we looked up and we saw that just registered Democrats in Washington, there are 120 Michael Browns that are registered – no, it's such. Michael was the most common boy's name between 1953 and 1980 in America. And Brown is like the second or third most popular name. So, except for Michael Johnson's and Michael Jones's, there are more Michael Browns. But anyway, you know, and they would say, oh, it's he's racist because the other guy was black. I had my children call me on the phone. Crying. My daughter called me on the phone crying one day because she picked up the Washington Post and they said, you know, that people are calling this man a racist, saying that he's hot. Because the press loved the story. The press loved the story that the voters are so friggin' dumb that they can't figure out there are two of us running for different offices. You know, my daughter called me crying on the phone and she said, Daddy, why are they saying these things about you? This isn't you. You're not a racist. You're not, you know, you're not a cheater. You're not a liar. And I go, well, honey, you know, that's the way it is. And it was tougher on my family. My wife had a meltdown one day at a polling place because a Washington Post reporter came up and said something to her. And she just finally, she'd had enough through the whole campaign, and she went off on how horrible it was and how terrible these people were. And then when she finished, she said to the woman, I should have told you this was off the record because this is my husband and I love him and he's just been brutalized. And the woman actually looked at her and said, Mrs. Brown, I won't print any of that. You know, I understand. And you know, that's, you know, you have to have a tough skin. And that's the way politics has always been. Andrew Jackson hated the press because they said he was sure that they had killed his wife. She had a heart attack. And it's because they hounded her so much during the campaign. So it's always.
And then conversely, we have on the other side of that, what Harvey Weinstein did for so long. And got away with it because of his power.
Which just blows me away. I mean, look, I didn't just bounce off the turnip truck, but it blows me away that this is so widespread. I remember saying I was talking to my wife about this last night when I worked at the DNC. I asked a friend of mine, the former co-host, I think, of the show, Kathleen Gomez, I asked her to pick me up a sandwich or something while she was out. And she said to me, oh, I don't go. I can't remember if it was Kathleen, but it was somebody. And they said, I don't go there because I hate walking by that construction site because of all the terrible things the men say to me. And I go, get out of here. I've walked with you past that construction site 100 times, and I've never heard anybody say anything. And like three women turned around and said to me, that's because you're with her. When right. She's alone, it's different.
Right.
And I was surprised, and they all said it. They said, oh, yeah, we don't go, you know. And I was saying to my wife, I don't get it, because if I want to impress a woman or attract a woman, I would never think of saying, hey, baby, hey, woo, woo, woo. You know, like they're going to turn around and go, wow, what a great guy, you know. It's like there's this comedian who used to say, why do men ride by – you know, ride down the street slowly with the window open and the music blaring. Like, women are going to say, oh, my God, that guy's got a radio in his car. I need to get with him, you know. But so that's the way I always thought about it. But Pat said to me, my wife said to me, it's attention. Negative attention or positive attention. It doesn't matter to these guys. They just
but
want
it's also that's a pack mentality too.
Yes.
Because usually there's a cacophony of sounds coming from construction sites. But with the one-on-one and how pervasive, and people say, oh, well, now everybody's just dumping on him or whatever. And I was like, no, what he did was wrong. I don't care if more women are coming forward because they're finally emboldened to do so. But the same thing with Bill Cosby too.
And Bill O'Reilly, $32 million settlement, it comes out today or yesterday. He get paid a $32 million settlement in a sexual harassment lawsuit, and the next day, Fox renewed his contract.
Yeah, because he was bringing in the most money of anybody.
Right, and that's the bottom line.
But you're giving – that's why it continues is because people do wink, wink, and look the other way. Right. And when I read these gals' stories that are coming forward now, and I knew about Bill Cosby's aberrant behavior – I should say alleged, I guess. But a friend of mine was a director on his show, The Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. And so this was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And the makeup and the hairstylist gals would go, alleged, would go into his dressing room, and he would have his robe open. Mm. And everybody knew that he was exposing himself to these young gals. Mm. I didn't know anything more that happened, but I would imagine after the other allegations have come forward from the numerous amounts of women, that must mean that other behaviors happened too.
And, you know,
could suggest that other behaviors happen too.
One of the things that really bothered me in the story was these accusations that have been made by Lupita Nyong'o, the really attractive black woman who played 7 Years a Slave, I think was the name of the movie, whatever the movie is that she won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. She says she was at Yale. When this guy was hitting on her. You know, I mean, doesn't this guy have kids?
Yes.
How could you hit on a college student?
And a wife.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean.
Details.
What I'm saying is, where do you draw the line of child molesting?
He doesn't.
You know, you're not, you don't consider a college student still a child? I mean, maybe. You know, I emotionally, I think they still are. I mean, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, yes. You know. I mean, some of them may be equipped to rule the world. I don't know. But I would just, you know, it wouldn't even enter my mind. You know, it wouldn't even enter my mind. And so I don't get it. But I got to tell you, we're turning deaf ear to all this. And again, I get back to what I was saying about capitalism. It's all about the money. Right. Now, I understand why these actresses didn't come forward, because this man is a very powerful man. He could ruin your career. And I could see I understand a little from their perspective. If I was a 23-year-old actress trying to make it in a business that's seriously competitive, especially for women, because there aren't a lot of great parts for women, you know, and traditionally women have had a really short half-life, you know, when they reach 40, right. For the most part, nobody wants them anymore unless you happen to be, Meryl Streep or Glenn Close, exactly. But, you know, and there's always the rare exception of women that have just really, really had a commanding presence like Lucille Ball, but there aren't Carol Burnett, there aren't many of those people that control their own destiny. I think Ball was the first one that ever really controlled her own destiny.
She created her own studio.
Right, created her own studio and called the shots. So I understand why you wouldn't come forward, you know. I have experience with somebody that's very close to me that had a terrible experience in her job, and she left. Not sexual harassment, but she left, and she didn't want to make an issue out of it because she had to go on to another job, mm-hmm. and she didn't want to be interviewing for jobs with the reputation of being somebody that had complained about her former employer.
Well, there was a mayor in San Diego that finally the women came out of the woodwork to accuse and confront him. And they were, powerful women, like high-ranking women in the military and in corporate America. Yeah. And my mom kept saying, that couldn't have happened. They wouldn't have. I was like, Mom, you haven't been in the workforce. You don't know. You don't know what goes on. It's terrible. I've experienced it a lot because in radio, women were the exception. And it was the old boys network, and there was a locker room mentality. And if you couldn't hang with the boys, then they didn't want you in the room. Right. And it was uncomfortable and it was awkward, but I wasn't going to say anything because then there wouldn't be any woman in the room because I would have just talked myself out of a job.
Right. And you know what? I guess I've seen that many, many times. But what this stuff with, Weinstein, this is something different to me. You know, I've certainly been in the room where guys make off-color jokes and there are women in the room that are obviously uncomfortable, but they chuckle along, you know, they go along. And I've seen that stuff. But I guess I'm so surprised that, you know, that these guys are saying, you know, put out or get out.
Right.
That surprised me a little. And I've got to tell you, I remember being in college and having a young woman, a pretty young woman who obviously had a day job. The rest of us were college students. You know, we showed up in jeans and T-shirts that said, you know, King Kong died for our sins and things like that. And this young woman came dressed every day in a suit and, stockings and high heels. And I remember she sat in the front row and our economics professor asked her to move because she distracted him. He said,
really?
Yeah, he said something like, with legs like that, I'd really rather you sit in the back room because I can't focus.
Whoa.
And she left the class. None of us said anything. I mean, a guy like that shouldn't, you know, feel bad because we should have done something. Like Quentin Tarantino came out the other day. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't.
Quentin Tarantino came out and said that several people had come to him but certainly people had come to him and told him about Weinstein, and he didn't take it. He feels bad that he didn't go to somebody with that. And I got to tell you, I was involved last year in a case of sexual harassment. Didn't happen in my office, but it happened in my area of the building, and the young woman involved went to her supervisor and he didn't know what to do. He quit actually, and he came to me, and I was tormented by this because this was somebody I knew, the perpetrator, and I called my brother who was president of a college, and he said, my opinion, Michael, is that the way you deal with it is you go to HR because that's their job. And so I turned over all the information that I got secondhand, actually. And that was the problem. The woman went to the supervisor, and the supervisor quit and then handed everything to me. So I never talked to the young woman involved. I couldn't talk to her. She left. But I turned everything over to HR, and you know they never did anything.
You're kidding.
To my knowledge, they have not done anything. You know, whether they talked to this guy, I wouldn't know. But they've never done anything, never reached back out to me, never contacted me, never contacted the young woman. And that's one thing, you know, that's something that we really have to stop. There has to be, a mechanism where these women feel safe to come and complain, and somebody does something, there has to be some consequence to this. And now I got to say this, as much as I respect you as a Republican, but we elected what do you think about electing a man who said those things that he said to the press about molesting women? We've elected him. Is this, Maria, is this bringing people out now? Because of this, or does this make it safe that we say that you can say, I can't even repeat to you, you know what the president said during the campaign.
You're talking about the Bush, Billy Bush.
Which he said to a gossip columnist.
Right.
I can't even repeat that because I don't use language like that in front of women. But here we went, you know, it was locker room talk, and we elected him president.
I don't think that we forgave him for that. And I know women in my community who said, oh, boys will be boys. And I was right. Like, no, that's not acceptable. And one of the gals, the president of the club that I founded that I have since resigned from, she got quoted in the newspaper about, you know, guy talk, locker room talk, boys will be boys. And I was embarrassed for her and the party because it sounded like she was sanctioning it. And it's unsanctionable. It's unacceptable. It's unforgivable.
Right. And you know what? We shouldn't. I don't know that in electing him we sanction it, but we turn the other way, just like we did with Weinstein. I really don't see the real difference because, you know, we said, okay, he's the candidate of a major political party. We, you know, he's a powerful man, obviously, and we just turned. We went, eh. You know, and that's what they did with Weinstein. People obviously knew about him, and the actresses involved certainly knew. And you know, today there's an article in the paper that was saying why are all these women that are coming out against Weinstein getting attention, and the women that came out about Donald Trump are all forgotten now. And again, I think it's it's the same thing. It's a matter of power. We tend, and men are still in a power position with women. They're still in it. We make more money. We hold more office. We're higher
more
up on
CEOs.
The ladder, more CEOs. Right. And maybe that's the long-term solution is that, you know, I often say to people, my older sister, who would be 70, just about to turn 74 now, was one of two graduates of George Washington University Law School. Now, 30 years after she graduated, GW put out more women. Had more women graduates than they had men graduates in law school. So,
and you know what I'm seeing in my world, because I work with cancer patients, there are more women oncologists and surgeons that are, and they're young too, and cutting edge, and you know, at the beginning with the research, and it's I just look at them and I think, I'm so happy you're there. It's so great that you're there,
well,
that you're at, you know, at the table having the conversation.
And we have a friend that's a pediatric oncologist, a woman. And the more women you get, the more women will follow. It's a whole glass ceiling thing. But it's funny, I'm reading Hillary Clinton's book right now, which I didn't like the title of, but I must say I'm surprised at her honesty. And one thing she said politically, which really struck home with me, is that there was nowhere for her to stand as a woman. She said, if I was tough, I was a bitch. And if I was warm and fuzzy, I was, you know, a girl,
too soft.
You know, too soft. Right. There was no place. Men that are tough are strong. Women that are tough are bitches. You know, men that are sensitive, you know, they go, isn't that wonderful, you know, to have a sensitive guy. Women are just, they're written off as being wishy-washy, not strong enough. So we do have to change that in society. But you know what? I mean, I keep on hearing with the president, people saying, well, he's not any different than he was in the campaign. And he's not any different than he was in the campaign. So why it troubles me that we didn't care about this stuff, that we didn't care about that, that we didn't care about the insensitive comments. You know, we're talking about courtesy and civility. The man always strikes out at other people whenever he's criticized, when they criticize him for not writing to veterans, not giving condolences to veterans. What's the first thing he said? Nobody else does it either. You know, there was a woman that went on and said that George Bush, when her husband died, George Bush came as president, came to her personally. She screamed at him, she said, because she was so angry. And then he held her while she sobbed. And that was his response, you know. But, you know, I don't get it. I don't get why we don't care.
Well, and maybe that's part of the problem, too, because I don't care for his Oval Office demeanor and behavior and reshaping the story and restating the facts and refuting things that turn out to be true. And that's also wrong. That's not okay. And you know, there's this billionaire that's pumping $10 million into an impeachment campaign started yesterday.
I know.
So,
I know. And, you know, this is my opinion. My opinion is he'll leave office before his term expires because you know, he really doesn't have a whole lot to lose. He is now a royal figure and will always be a royal figure. He can go back to a nicer house than the house he's living in now. I think he'll say, look, I tried to drain the swamp and you just can't drain it. It's too corrupt. The people and his that core group that supports him at the most basic level will say, yeah, you know, we already believe it's all corrupt Yeah, and I think that'll be his exit strategy. But you know, the thing that troubles me most about all that, is that 20%, and this is where the Democrats have to take responsibility, and it's pissing me off that we're not doing it, but 20% of the people that voted for this man said that he was unqualified, in their opinion. But they voted for him anyway because they dislike what's going on in Washington so much that they didn't care, you know? Yeah. Mae West used to say, given a choice between two evils, I would always take the one I had never tried. And, you know, and I think that's it. You know, they said, hey, maybe it's time to throw our shoes into the machinery, you know, the sabot into the machine and create sabotage in Washington. Maybe it's time to do that. And we talk about him being obsessed with the fact that he didn't win the popular vote. Well, the Democrats are even more obsessed with it. You know, how many times are we going to say Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than he did? That's not the way the game is played, and we knew that from the start, right? Right. You wouldn't go into a football game and say, hey, look, I know the score was 21-0, but we got 100 more yards than they did, so we should win.
We actually had more fans in the stadium.
Right.
So we should win by popular.
We're sorry that your quarterback dropped the football in the end zone twice and the guys from the other team jumped on it. But that's the way the game's played, right? And we know that. And so, yeah, that bugs me too. And you know, I think we all got to step up to the plate. And Maria Sanchez, thanks so much for stepping up to the plate with me. You do it week after week, and you add so much to this show.
Well, I want to end on a little bit of a light note, if we may, because about the family dinners, which is a basic thing. And they say this again, 5 nights a week, an hour a night. Studies indicate that the dinner conversation is a more potent vocabulary booster than reading, and the stories told around the kitchen table help the children build resilience. And the icing on the cake is that regular family meals also lower the rates of obesity and eating disorders in children and adolescents, which was just stated this week that 40% of us are obese in this country. 40,
well,
4 out of 10.
Let me just say that although this is not going to affect the mashed potatoes and the sweet potatoes and the stuffing I have at my Thanksgiving dinner. Maybe we should all, coming close to Thanksgiving, we should all take that in mind and have a big family dinner and communicate and make that the centerpiece of the dinner, is to communicate with each other.
Yes, and put all those devices away.
Put all those devices away, and we'll see it. But don't put your computer away, because you got to listen to us next week when we'll be back, and hopefully we'll have an exciting guest, or maybe we'll just continue the conversation. And we're going to leave you now with a classic from Aretha Franklin, because as we all know, it's all about R-E-S-P-E-C-T. See you next week.
Goodbye, America.
Give the people their right to vote.